We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And welcome to In the Know. We are 2 days. Is it 2 days from actual basketball?
Yeah, we got the doubleheader on Tuesday.
That's pretty exciting. So, Michael, I know you want to talk about the last preseason game a lot. But I do have to make good on a bet, and it's ready. So,
I mean, let's not rush it. We've been waiting weeks, if not months, for this anyway. The bet went down all the way back in June when we all knew you were going to lose, so we've been waiting for this for quite a while.
I was only a few million off. Just like 2.5 or 3.
Okay, but... Kind of take me through your process. What happened first? Did you look for a beat? Did you just start writing? Did you have did you sketch out? Did you do bullet points? Like, I want to know exactly how the process of this rap came about.
So it was real scientific. I basically, every time I went in the bathroom and I had my phone, I tried to think of cool lyrics. And I would type them in my phone until I had, like, 15 of them. And then I tried to put them all together. And then I went and tried to find some music that actually fit it. So,
do you see this as, like, something now that you felt like it's kind of a calling of yours, something that you've pushed to the side that you might want to pursue and do more of? Did it come pretty naturally to you? What do you feel about rap and specifically rapping and writing? Prior to this, were you skeptical for the last 27 years, like Keith?
No, I knew I could do this all along. It was no problem. And I knew I would sound absolutely ridiculous.
Okay. And, like, last question before we hear it, because I know people are just waiting. Like, what were your general themes that you wanted to hit on when you went into this? I know a lot of this took place in the bathroom, so this will kind of shed some light on what you think of when you're taking a deuce, but... What were some things that you really wanted to convey, some messages with the power of this rap?
So I was definitely trying to get, like, the unspoken person's message out there. It's like, it's the guy who never gets to go in front of the camera or go in front of, like, reporters and be truthful. So I was like, I'm going to channel our GM and like, let them speak through my music.
Wow. Deep, that's deep. very
With that
that's
deep.
Brave of you. No, that's like when Cyndi Lauper did True Colors, and like you're giving a voice to a, well, not to a group of people, but to a whole person. That's beautiful for you to do.
Yeah.
All right. Well, without further ado, I'd love to hear it.
All right, here we go. And it may not be super clear. You guys can hear probably most of it, but I'll make sure I post it by itself as well at the end of the pod.
So is it going to be on iTunes? Or
I could put it on iTunes if people really want it. but I think first we'll just put it at the end of the pod. You can fast forward there if you want to hear it clearly. But here
beautiful.
It is now.
All right.
Our Swizzle here, coming straight from Bourbon Street Shots. I hope you're ready. Here we go. You think your job is hard, then come down to NOLA. Try and build a team with your owner in a coma. They say tear it down, trust the process, it's easy. You'll get a savior like Bennett or Beasley. You seen that P-E-R? No way. It's not gonna work, I'm not gonna end up like Hannigan. I'm putting my chips down and signing young veterans.
Young vets.
Think of all that fine upside. The other teams can't see it cause they're just blind. If a guy ain't developed, you gotta work to free his mind. He's been losing every day with coaches who just bitch. Gonna get him in my system and treat him to the Popovich.
Young vets.
His name's Greg, baby. With 3 G's.
Young vets.
You know what that means.
Young vets. Young vets.
I'll bring him in house, they already know the NBA. They'll slim down, gain 5 pounds, and play the right way. We'll play big or small, and we'll switch the pace. It'll feel like he's got hit with a mace.
Young vets. Young vets. Young vets.
We'll be killing off teams like it's Game of Thrones. It'll feel like the Red Wedding as I feed on their bones. You see, I'm building a team that'll stand the test of time. That Larry O'Brien trophy, it's mine.
Young vets.
Yeah, and all those guys who say I shouldn't be trading my pick, well, you can just suck my...
Young vets.
Young veterans.
There you have it.
Oh, my gosh. I do not even know what to do. I don't even know what my favorite part is. I think it's one of those songs that it's going to change throughout time. Like,
Young veterans.
Yeah, the suck my young vets is great, but the Popovich line I loved. The straight fire right out the gate with the owner in a coma. I really don't know what my favorite part is. Is there a part to you that you really you remember writing and it'll always be your favorite for a sentimental reason?
The first line is my favorite.
Okay.
And it's just because, I'll be honest, I felt a little bad saying it.
Yeah, I think a coma's nice. I think that's the best way to describe it. Oh, man. Yeah,
I had to have Game of Thrones in there, so just so everybody.
Yeah, although I'm just starting to rewatch with my wife now, and she's just coming to the end of season one, so I think you might have spoiled something for her, but I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
Now that was fantastic.
And just so everybody knows, this is the first time Mike's heard it too, so.
Did you play it for your wife and your kids?
I did play it for my kids, yeah.
Were they proud of their dad, or what did they think?
They all gave me 5.
Wow. Yeah, now they get to go to school, say that their dad's a better rapper than your dad, and yeah, that's something. I'm still trying to process it all. I'm definitely going to listen to this pod tomorrow and fast forward to the end on my walk and just play it on a loop a couple times.
Okay. So there it is. I'm paying up for foolishly saying that Drew Holiday was going to be maxed out this summer.
Do you want to give any credit on the beat to anybody? Or we?
Oh, it's just a free beat on SoundCloud. I believe it's by Passion Hi-Fi. They had like a whole bunch of free things up there. So
beautiful. Thanks to Passion Hi-Fi.
Yeah.
When this sells millions on iTunes, I'm sure we're going to have to give them a cut, but No, that was beautiful. I don't even know where to go. I feel like everything else is downhill from here. Even if the Pelicans go like 76-6 and win the title, I feel like our season kind of already climaxed with that wrap. So don't really know where else to go, but I guess we could talk about the one Pelican game that we had this week, if you want to even call it that. Starters played for a couple of minutes. They didn't play anything like we've been seeing them play. Drew Holiday just was a chucker. AD and Boogie kind of looked disengaged at best. And they got blown out by the Memphis Grizzlies, the team that they're going to happen to see in just two or three more days. So what was your take on that game, if any?
I know why they did it. They said they did it because they wanted to try out the starting five that they plan on starting the season with. But even that, it feels like it could be smokescreen. Like, that could be not the starting five, and it was just – they're clearly not trying to, like, go hard or give anything away to Memphis of what they're going to do. It was a little embarrassing the whole game, frankly. Like, and Memphis isn't, like, a hotbed of talent, it feels to me. And I know Conley and Gasol are there, but lose by 50? It's pretty bad. Even if it's a preseason game. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not encouraging to me. It was more just like, again, you could look at the results of the preseason or you could look at the way they played. That first preseason game, it was threes and shots in the paint. And as the preseason went on, it just started to look more and more like the Pelicans of old. Like, it's easy to say all these things and have coaches tell you they're going to play this way or that way. Players are just our habits, and for them to get out of habits, I just don't know how likely that is to happen, and it just seems like as the preseason went on, they kind of reverted back to some things, and I'm just curious to see how it's going to be when the season opened, but yeah, that Memphis game, it was just a parade of mid-range jumpers and ugly shots again and no real flow and passing on offense. And yeah, I know we could say all the things that we want to believe, like they weren't showing their hand and, they weren't really caring or playing the way that they wanted to play, but still you got a team of players with a bunch of habits that are not ideal. And then all of a sudden we're just expecting them to turn on the light switch without the guy who was supposed to be the point guard and get everybody in certain spots to begin the year. So I don't really care about the loss to Memphis. I'm just kind of disheartened by the fact that it seems to me like this whole training camp was for naught because they went in the whole time thinking they were going to play one way, and they could say all they want about, the Rondo injury not changing much, but I just don't believe it. I think they're going to go back to play in a slightly different way than they would with Rondo. So it just, I don't know, feels like they're kind of starting again from scratch without any real cohesion and chemistry. And oh yeah, the season is 2-3 days away.
Yeah, I mean, but Drew, Boogie, and Davis have actually played together a lot. So I don't know if I would say without chemistry. I think that, we've said this before, if Drew is your only ball handler, it's kind of hard to manufacture the exact same kind of shots you want. So Rondo being gone is a problem. And I want to make sure that people aren't taking this as, oh, well, Rondo's super important. Without Rondo, the team sucks and everybody's, they're all thinking he's amazing. It's not that. It's just that he played a specific role. And he did that role particularly well on offense. And when he was around, he could help get people the shots that the coaching staff want. And there are probably another 15, 20 point guards in the league who could do something similar. And if they were next to Rondo, we could probably hope for some sort of similar kind of offense. But we don't have anybody else to stand next to Drew. Rondo was it. They went and they spent their money on Rondo. And now we don't have Rondo for a considerable amount of time. And we don't have a backup point guard because we traded or let go all the rest of them because we had Rondo. So, I don't know. You keep mentioning on Twitter and stuff that you wondered, you know, is Jordan Crawford going to be on the team? I believe now his guarantee is complete. He's going to get money this year no matter what. But they could still move people or drop people and pick up other players. Quinn Cook is now free. Do you think they're going to do anything like that, or do you think they're going to go into the season with what they have and just try to wait it out for Rondo?
I think they'll definitely go into the season with what they have. I think that maybe by Monday and next week, after they've played their first couple games and they're eligible for the hardship, they might pick up a guy. I think one of the dangers is they're so close to the luxury tax that, like, if they keep picking up these 10-day guys, those salaries start adding up, and before you know it, you're in the lux tax, or you're going to have to dump, you know, an Ashik or an Ajinsa or somebody like that before the season. So it's like they're just walking this tightrope with the fact that they're up against the luxury tax, and there's no way that they'll be given the ability to go over it. So I think that they're, you know, at least to start the season, they're going to go on what they have. And Quinn Cook or somebody like that's not going to be the savior, or even Beno Udrah. But yeah, I feel like Drew was 100% going to play a different way this upcoming season with Rondo there. And I don't believe that it's going to happen now with Rondo out. So they might be better. I guess what you said, the upside and your optimism would be that, you know, maybe this team is better defensively with Rondo out, more Clark in. I just didn't really see that either. I did not see a team that, you know, in any way has the look of a team that's going to be elite defensively. And it has very little size on the perimeter. And then on the inside, you know, it has shot blocking with Davis, and Cousins appears to be a little better in the pick and roll. But I don't know. The Rondo injury really threw me for a loop because of when it happened. I thought that at least they would get out the gate, get to play for a couple weeks, a couple months, a certain way. And then, of course, Rondo was going to miss a couple games during the season, and, you know, then they would have to adjust. But for it to just be coming right out of the gate, you know, I'm not going to lie, I'm a little worried.
Yeah, and, I mean, we also got to remember, last year they had an okay defense. Wasn't great, it was okay. And they did lose Solomon Hill, and I know you don't think he's an amazing defender, but even if you can deploy a wing defender who is better than average, and they can make somebody work, which this team in the past doesn't even have that. Like, their defenders have just been flat bad. Like, that makes a real difference. It gives the, you know, Davis and Cousins that extra, you know, half a second, 1 second difference between where they have to shift over and block a shot, or they're coming over too late for it to matter. And they're not, like, Darius Miller hasn't shown me that he's able to stay in front of guys who have any sort of speed. And Drew Holiday does, but he's now, you know, guarding the best guard, so we don't have a wing defender again. It piles up. We're missing two of our five starters before the season even starts. And you're right, like, I don't know if I buy into the training camp quite as heavily as you do. I've seen players come back to teams, and it does take like a few games to start working them back in again and really getting a flow. But it feels like they can start doing stuff if they had planned for it earlier in the year. After a little bit of time, it's not like it's just, hey, you know, you're done for the year because they're not there day one. But I don't know. It's pretty concerning what we saw in that game. And I really, really hope that this perimeter defense can shore itself up. The comments from our friend Alvin Gentry is that Tony Allen will probably not see regular minutes, but he'll be deployed here and there to slow somebody down or to cool somebody off. Do you think that's the appropriate role for Tony Allen on the team in the state it is right now?
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't limit any possibility at this point. Like, I wouldn't rule out Tony Allen starting, and I wouldn't rule out him not being in the rotation at all. And then same goes for any of those guys. Like, I don't see any reason why we know exactly what we're going to get or what somebody's great at from any single player other than Drew. Like, Drew should definitely be in the rotation, but what has any other guy done in this offense, in this system, or even in their career outside of, you know, maybe Tony Allen, but what have any of them shown that lets you know that they've definitely got to have a certain role in this rotation? I mean, they're all guys who, you know, for the most part are just guys. And I guess I'm just saying I wouldn't rule out anything. Yeah, in theory, Tony Allen coming in and just working like a dog for 8 minutes, a half, and putting a guy out of his rhythm would be awesome. But maybe it would be awesome, too, to start him and let him crash the glass and, you know, maybe put him next to Darius Miller if Miller's hitting his threes, and then he's the non-shooter, but he's slashing and all of these other things. So I wouldn't limit anybody. I mean, has Etwan Moore showed you anything that made you think, oh, well, that guy's got to start and we got to get him 30 minutes? Has Ian Clark done anything that, you know, has said to you that he should be the one starting or getting the most minutes? I wouldn't rule anything out yet or try to act if I was Gentry, as I knew exactly what this rotation was going to be, because I don't see anybody putting themselves way ahead of anyone else.
No, I don't see that happening. And I got to be honest, I'm starting to worry a little bit about Etwan Moore, who last year I liked, and this year, for some reason, when I watch him, and he just, there's like an article out there about how he's gotten over his turf toe and he's finally healthy, but he feels slow at times, both offensively and defensively, and more so than I remember. Am I just being stupid when I say that?
Well, I mean,
he was never blazing fast, but
no, but he had some explosion. He liked to be around the basket. Yeah, I'm really curious what to see out of him, because there were stretches where he was really starting to come on last year, and you know, he was looking good, but he was so up and down. Like, let's take a look at just his 3-point percentage by month. So he starts the first month off at 25%, then 36, then 43, 44, all right, good, and then down to 31, down to 30, then finishes the last month at 33. There was just, you know, right in that December-January stretch when a couple of guys were starting to play well, he was shooting okay, but he was just so up and down, so inconsistent, and I don't know, you know, what you're supposed to expect from him this season. But, I mean, we know that he can be a good shooter. We know he's at least an average, if not above average, defender who could cover multiple positions. But, the overall thing that I keep cutting back to that I'm worried about is that without a doubt, the NBA is a perimeter league, and, you know, outside of a couple of the main guys, a guard league. And, I mean, Drew Holiday is by far and away now with Rondo down our best guard, and I can't even say that I have any level of confidence in him. So in a league where guards are so important, I don't even know if there's one that I feel that I have any trust in, game out, and I definitely know there's not two or more.
Yeah, I mean, I still trust Drew. I've seen stuff so far this preseason that I'm pretty comfortable with. I know what I'm going to see from him, like, just in general. Like, you're going to be able to get a moderate of number of points and assists and some nice drives here and there, and he's not going to take over much of anything ever. And that's okay. Like, you could have a guard who's playing like that and be perfectly fine, especially if you have two other big stars. But you're right. We need a second guy. We need somebody else. We need another backcourt or wing guy who's going to do something at all. And Dante Cunningham has been just a disaster for me this entire preseason. And it's stupid because it's preseason. But holy crap. Like, watching him can be so painful on the wing. He's so slow. I'd rather almost just see Diallo out there.
So, do you think that they're, I mean, I guess what it keeps coming back to is that those two, AD and Cousins, are just going to be amazing. Do you think, how many teams do you think that the Pelicans could beat if, let's say, AD or Cousins, one of them has a C night for them or worse? Like, where they're in foul trouble, they're missing everything, you know, not really contributing much on both ends. How many teams can this Pelicans team beat if only one of those guys is having an above-average game?
Do you mean in a series or just on any given night? Because this is the NBA.
Any given night.
Any given night, like, you have a chance to beat anyone except for the Warriors or the Spurs. The Spurs will execute you. I mean, I just, like, we saw that team last year. We saw Davis and Drew Holiday with Solomon Hill as the best player on the court, and they were actually able to win some games. Not a lot, but some. So, like, it's still possible. It's just if Cousins is out there and he's not playing well, or Davis is out there and he's not playing well, like, the good thing now is last year, if Davis didn't play well, we were screwed. It was done. And now at least we have Cousins, who hopefully can keep us there. So I'm not flipping out about this season. I feel like this is probably a 500 team, and if they could all click, they could be better. But it's hard to see that at the beginning. And again, we just had a really bad taste in the mouth 50-point whooping that we got to enjoy. I guess I shouldn't say 50 points. It was only 41. It's not that big. Dante Cunningham, by the way, minus 36 for that game.
Oof. Yeah.
25 minutes.
Yeah, it feels like the best hope has to be that you're just around 500 or a little bit over, and then you could finally use that first round pick to trade for a perimeter guy, and then, you know, either Rondo or Hill or both are back as well, and you're doing,
make a push.
Yeah, you're doing well there. Which is possible. That was basically the formula for the playoff season when you got a Quincy Pondexter and a Norris Cole to come in and to play a little better on the perimeter than you had been getting. So it's definitely possible. And then if you look at the real formula, I mean, if AD is attacking the basket and getting the fouls that we saw, like in that Chicago game, and then when AD's out, if Cousins being aggressive and, you know, putting up points, like, there's, you know, a lot of teams have this. We nitpick our own teams and, you know, look at all the things that are going wrong with our own teams. But, you know, how many other teams have had one or two amazing players and then a bunch of guys who are just kind of laughing stocks that their own fan base, you know, loathes, but they still win high 40s, low 50s games? I mean, do you really think OKC fans liked anybody other than Westbrook and maybe Adams last year? You know, even a couple of years ago, not last year, but a couple of years ago when the Rockets won 56, they did it with, like, Harden, Josh Smith, you know, Trevor, like, nobody really that fantastic. If your superstars are playing at that level, you know, it could really carry you. So I guess it's still very possible for all of these guys to have the deficiencies that we recognize. But if AD and Cousins are playing to their full capability, it might not matter.
Yeah. And that's what we can hope for. I love Marc Gasol, by the way.
Yeah, he's just, man, he just
so smart. Just so smart.
Every smart pass, every smart. I will say, though, I mean, he was for several years a defensive of the year, player of the year candidate, or, you know, even front runner. I think his offense has definitely surpassed his defense.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think they're both sliding different directions, but like just the way he sets screens and moves to the right. I mean, he's just a brilliant basketball player.
Yeah. Yeah. Like skill wise, there's no doubt that Boogie is the more skilled player. But if I had one season and I wanted the Pelicans to be the best that they can, I would take Gasol over Cousins right now to play next to AD. I think that duo would be unstoppable in many ways.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. I just had to say that. Whenever I watch the Grizzlies, I have to gush a little bit about Marc Gasol. I think it's just part of my contract.
What about Drew? They were obviously trying, you know, the focus of the last game was Drew, you just go out, be aggressive, get as many shots as you can, go crazy and attack. Let's see if we can find something. You know, again, let's say that the supporting players are just meh. AD and Cousins are what we expect, and then Drew Holiday could finally make that leap and be Conley-esque this year for the whole season. We basically get what we've seen out of Conley the last couple of years. Do you think that's possible at all? And if that were to happen, what would this team's ceiling be?
So Conley used to be the guy I always wanted Drew to be. Like when I look at Drew, I was like, he's got all the tools. He's got everything that Conley has, except for maybe Conley had a step on him in speed a little bit, but not tremendously so. And Drew definitely has the size and could, you know, use that to leverage his defense even better than Conley does. I have that pretty much in the rearview mirror. I honestly think that Conley is a, you know, I would take him over probably all but five point guards in the league right now. I think he's a fantastically intelligent point guard. And if he was in the East, he'd be an all-star every single year, just without any question. I would take him over Kyrie Irving. I'd probably be right there with John Wall. I'd probably take Conley over Wall. That's how much I think of Mike Conley right now. So.
Wow. So it sounds like you really respect the Grizz, especially their two stars and their basketball IQ. Do you feel the same way about any of the Pelicans' top three players, or is it something where?
So are you basically asking me would I trade? You know, well, I think it's not even fair. Davis is better than any of those players.
Yeah, not trade, but it's just like basketball IQ has been something that specifically me, but we're both kind of harped on this last year. And then you bring in a Solomon Hill, and he's overpaid, but you know that he's a good locker room guy and a smart guy. You bring in Rondo, who's known for his basketball IQ, yada, yada, yada. And then before the season even starts, they're already hurt, and you're back to relying on these ultra-talented players who nobody mistakes them for having a high IQ. Is it going to be a lot of the same frustrations this year for us as fans, as we see a lot of the same dumb mistakes being made? Or do you see that this team will possibly be a, you know, at least a moderately high IQ team?
So I don't think it'll be that high of an IQ team, but I do think that there's going to be one ultimate thing that bails them out and makes it not matter as much. So high IQ helps you when you're generating open shots and you're able to, you know, find the cutter at the right time or set the screen that flips the guy just a little bit who can then make the reverse pass inside. And you kind of have to have a whole team. If you only have one high IQ person, your team's still going to look stupid. If you have two high IQ people, it's probably not going to be that great looking. You got to have three or four. But this team isn't ever going to be able to do that. But the one thing that's going to save it, and it may not be very fun to watch, but Davis and Cousins on any given night are going to absolutely destroy people on the inside and just generate free throws like crazy. I fully believe that they're going to be hitting something around 19 free throws a game between the two of them. And, you know, our team the past few years, if it got 21 in a game, they were feeling pretty good about themselves. And just these two guys by themselves are going to get that. So I think that will bail them out a lot of different ways, because they're just going to be impossible to stop when they're working together and when they're working alone. So.
Okay. So then specifically to the games this week, we've got at Memphis, they're playing Golden State at home. And then they're starting another little mini road trip going to play the Lakers. The Golden State game is what it is. We know what to expect there. Between the Memphis and the Lakers game.
Well, wait, before you just go right by the Golden State Warriors, who, you know, haven't played a game yet, so who knows how they're going to look.
Okay.
But the Golden State Warriors, what percentage chance do you give the Pelicans on any given night to beat the Golden State Warriors?
So basically, and you're saying both teams have the rosters that they have today?
Yeah.
I mean, basically what has to happen is, I mean, the Warriors have those games where they just mess around and they're terrible from three. You might be able to get Draymond in foul trouble. I say if they play 100 times, the Pelicans are winning 8-12, so I'll go high end. I'll say 12%.
Okay. My number was 10, but I was just in the back of my head. So I just wanted to see if you were thinking the same sort of thing. Which is just, like, how many games did they lose last season? They lost 15, and some of them were to pretty poor teams. So I guess really they lose at a higher rate than 10%. It's closer to 17 or 18. But, ah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they have those games where they just mess around and they jack up a bunch of shots and they miss. And like I said, if there's a team that could get Draymond into foul trouble, it would definitely be the Pelicans, and then that could definitely change the game for New Orleans. So there's always a chance. But, yeah, I think if you're looking at wins this week, it's Memphis and L.A. So which one of those two games are you feeling more confident about, the Pelicans walking out with a W?
Seriously, you have to ask that question? It's Los Angeles. Like, have you been drinking the Los Angeles Kool-Aid?
I mean, LeVar Ball's saying they're going to win 50. And he speaks things into existence, so.
That's right. Yep. We might as well just give up now. They're going to be in the playoffs, and they're going to be a 4 seed. Just, like, come on. I'll be honest, though. Which will be more painful for you? If the Pelicans go, you know, and lose to the Lakers, would you be more upset? See them go and lose to the Lakers, or have them lose the other two games badly?
Yeah, I wouldn't be that upset by a Lakers loss. A lot of times, bad teams that are bad, over the course of the season are actually pretty good early on, just because they're young and naive and they're, you know, healthy at that time and they're all trying hard. I don't think going into LA with a bunch of young guys who are going to want to run up and down the court and jack threes and a crowd that's excited, that'll probably be Lonzo's first or second home game, whatever. I don't believe that would be a loss. That would absolutely surprise me. If you get blown out by Memphis and Golden State, like, to me, that would be way more disheartening, because it just shows you that even with two superstars and a whole training camp and one of those superstars getting into the best shape of his life and, you know, yada, 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 even with all of that, you're still not a serious playoff contender. So that, to me, that would be a little bit more disheartening than, you know, a young upstart team flinging up a bunch of shots and having them go in and losing that game on the road.
What do you? So last year when the season opened, and before they, you know, had lost already five games, and they were obviously starting to fall apart a little bit and frazzle at the edges, which happened pretty quick last year. If people don't remember it, it wasn't like that many games before the team was already realizing that we were really in trouble. Anthony Davis came out those first like four games and just lit the world on fire. And what do you think the chances are he does something similar in this opening?
I actually think Boogie's more likely to go off against Memphis. Golden State, I think that's a good matchup for AD, and it's possible. And then the Lakers should pose no threat. And then he has another Kentucky guy who he loves beating up on those Kentucky guys. And Julius Randle he'll be going up again. So I think that there's a chance he could start pretty hot. It'll just all be dependent on, you know, if he's trying to give way to Boogie or if he's being aggressive. But I think another hot start is very likely for AD. He just looks bigger. You know, he's in great shape coming in. This is a season where everybody is basically saying, look, we need to figure it out this year. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if he comes out just scorching and tearing it up. What do you think?
No, I fully expect that Davis is going to be on fire. I expect to see what we saw in the very first game of the preseason. I think that was him just trying out his stuff, seeing what's going to happen, and then he took the rest of the preseason and was like, yeah, whatever. I know what I can do. I know that I have these moves, and I know I can play off of Boogie these ways, and I'm going to do that when the season, like, against Memphis, he could give less than a damn. And this is a guy who, when he's actually trying, was drawing free throws and buckets, and what did he get, like two? He was not going all out, not even going partially out. And, you know, last season, it's just in case you guys forget, like, he was putting up, like, 35 and 15 those first four games. He was doing everything he could to get this team wins in those first few games. So I fully expect that if he comes out and puts up even something close to that, it's not going to take a lot from Cousins and Drew to push us the rest of the way over.
Yeah, no, that first game of last year, he put up 50 points and 34 field goal attempts, 15 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 steals, and 4 blocks. That's insane. Who do you remember who the second and third best Pelicans were in that game?
No, because Drew wouldn't be there, so I would guess it would probably be... Good God, who would it be? Probably Galloway, because I remember Galloway got hot a few times early on. And Buddy was terrible in the beginning. I will go Dante.
Tim Frazier and Lance Stevenson. Those were his sidekicks in a game.
Oh my God.
But they almost pulled off a victory, hung in it with Denver, but yeah. Pelicans went a blistering 3 of 19 from 3. Tim Frazier put up a double-double with 15 and 11. Actually had 5 rebounds, which made him the number 2 rebounder on the team, ahead of guys like Ashik, Ajinsa. It was embarrassing.
So what was the starting lineup of that team?
So it was Tim Frazier, Etuan Moore, Solomon Hill, Anthony Davis, and Omer Asik. First one off the bench was Lance, Terrence Jones, Buddy, Ajinsa, Galloway, and then Dante got 8 minutes and put up a Dante line of 0 points, 1 turnover, 1 foul, 0 blocks, 0 steals, 0 rebounds, 0 free throw attempts, 1 assist.
And I don't know why people like actually still claimed this offseason that he's really important. Because he's not.
Yeah.
He's so bad half the time.
Yeah.
Although I just picked him to be the guy who maybe was the second, you know, scoring the most for them. I just knew Solomon Hill was terrible.
Yeah.
For like a month and a half, and he healed the first like month, couldn't hit a shot to save his life. And I don't know how I missed Frasier. I should have picked Frasier. Frasier was my boy. So.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
Like,
Frasier is your second best player.
Yeah, I mean, Tim Frasier by far was the second best player in that game.
And then the second night they went against Golden State, didn't they? And they
yeah.
they played them tough too.
Yeah, well, AD played them tough, but yeah, I mean, it was. So what you're saying is right. I mean, he really didn't have any help. That next night he had 45, 17 assists, and then yeah, the best players were Tim Frasier at 21 and 10. Lance Stephenson had 15, and then Dante just came out of nowhere to give you 15 and 8. But that's what Dante is. That's what I said before. That night he was just happening to hit those open threes. Other ones he didn't. But yeah, the trifecta, the shooting guard trifecta of Etuan Moore, Buddy Hield, and Langston Galloway combined to go 3 for 20 from the field and 0 for 8 from 3. With zero free throw attempts. So that's what you were getting from your shooting guards going up against Golden State. So.
No problem.
Yeah. Yeah, none at all. Meanwhile, Clay goes off for 28. You're right. If AD just comes out like gangbusters, he'll have more help than, you know, he's had in quite a while, and definitely more than last year with Cousins. And then it really comes down to Drew. I mean, I don't think it's absolutely insane to think that AD, Cousins, and Drew could give you 70. I mean, do you, with Rondo out, can those three give you 70?
No, I would almost expect something approaching 70.
But that's what I'm saying. If, like, one of those guys is off and they give you 55 or 60, do you really feel like you're going to win 30 or 40% of NBA games? Like,
so let's just talk like real variance here, though. Like, when we're talking about like these games where, you know, the people always do the thing where, well, you, in order to win, you got to hit 108 points or 105 points, and, you know, the big three there, you can only count on them for 70, and all these other guys suck, so there's no way they're gonna combine for 35 points altogether. But, you know, these guys who only average 6 points a game or average 5 points a game, it's not that unusual that Dante Cunningham will score 11 and Crawford will score 14 and Etuan Moore will score 12. And you get another 2 points here, 2 points here, 2 points here, and you're there. It's actually not that unusual that happens. So I think that it's very possible that we have a few guys who can come in and chip in enough points that every game is definitely winnable, unless it's against Golden State, because they just have to be able to slow the other team down defensively a little bit and then just get the little bit of contributions on the offensive side from those guys. And I think it's possible. Now, are there going to be games where we're going to be like, our big three combined for 75 points tonight and the rest of the team combined for 20? Yes. I bet it's going to happen not too infrequently this year during the first couple months. But even then, you're still putting up 95, and that means you're in a game, unless you're against Golden State. You need like 109 to beat them, I believe.
Yeah, no, I get those, and those are possible. Like I'm saying, my bigger worry is the game where those three have 50 or 55. I don't know how you score another 50. You would need two or three of the guys to have aberration games in order to do that. Or maybe you're just shutting down teams. I mean, maybe you really go to Memphis in this first game, and would it be insane to hold them to 85, 88 points with the roster that they have? I mean, they were lighting it up the other night with Dylan Brooks going 5 for 5 from deep and all these crazy things happening that I highly doubt are going to happen in the game on Wednesday. Then it's possible you control the defensive glass. Maybe you get more possessions, with offensive rebounding. So I agree that all of that's possible. I think that now, with Rondo out and without somebody to get easy shots for other guys, you know, and get them to score in that way, I don't know. I think it might be a little bit more difficult if AD or Boogie is having an off night or Drew has one of those nights like we saw the first couple of games when AD and Boogie were put together and he was just god-awful. So I'm looking forward to it. I don't know. The Rondo thing, like I said, I don't think it individually made them worse, because going from Rondo to Ian Clark or Moore is a huge downgrade in a vacuum. I just think that they wanted to come into this season playing a certain way. I actually think they had two styles that they were going to go with, and multiple things that they were going to run off of it, but that most of the time when they had their starting lineup on the court or Rondo was on the court, they were going to do a lot of pick and roll, dribble handoffs, etc. And I think that their playbook has shrunk pretty significantly with Rondo being down. So, you know, hopefully just the pure talent that they have will be able to overcome it. But just the more I've thought about it, the more this Rondo injury just slightly ticks me off.
Yeah. Because you got to be used to this by now, right? Actually, that's the funniest thing. Is like I've had other people say that to me. Oh, this is what the Pelicans do. Is you got to be used to it. But no, it still sucks. Like I can't believe I just said that to you, because like it's so frustrating and makes me so angry. And it's like, why the hell can't we get like a freaking break? Sandy, break.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I don't know what it is, but I don't feel like it's this way. For most others, if any other, but you just got to hope that it'll just be a couple of games and everything will fall back into place when Rondo comes back. It's really hard to believe. Like, again, you have a bunch of things in the middle for the Pelicans. You have very few knowns. Like, if I said to you, what are the things that you absolutely know are going to happen this year for the Pelicans that you could bank on, how many things could you possibly list? It seems like there's just dozens and dozens and dozens of unknowns. And if that's the case, the likelihood of those things breaking right as opposed to wrong, I don't know, you know, how you could be on the side of optimism when it comes to the unknowns.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. I think there are more things I can bank on this year than last year.
So, like, what? Give me a couple of things that you just know are bound to happen, or the Pelicans are going to get out of X player.
I think I just mentioned this, on any given night, the Pelicans should have a free throw advantage. On any given night, I do feel like that they will control the paint, especially on the glass. They still suck at long rebounds, which is bizarre to me, but at least they're going to be able to control that. And before, Oshik wasn't controlling anything, and yeah, Davis might come over and wipe something out, or Terrence Jones would come over and wipe something out, but those guys were usually wiping out an easy run to the rim, and I feel like there's going to be at least a little bit more resistance there. So I feel like the paint will be locked down a little bit better than it has in the past. I am 100% convinced that I will see Davis in the best offensive light we have seen him ever this season. I am fairly convinced that this team will be able to at least always have a advantage when it comes to switching on the perimeter. I think that they can actually do that. I think when they try to go, you know, straight up and guard guys normally, they're not going to be playing particularly well. That's pretty much it. That's my list.
Yeah.
We'll see more cuts. We'll see more cuts this year. I've already seen more cuts in this preseason. I mean, if you think of any... Like last season, the only guys who I would tell you ever bothered to cut, ever, was Dante sometimes, and Etuan Moore a lot, and nobody else knew what a cut was. I guess Drew would do some nice give and goes every once in a while, and that's kind of a weird cut, but it's kind of a cut. So I'll give him that.
Well, that's very nice of you to give it to him. To me, there's just still so much up in the air. I don't know, are they going to play the way Finch wants them to play? Are they going to revert back to bad habits? Are they going to crash the offensive glass like Gentry said they would do, or not the way, I mean, they really didn't in this preseason. So I would say the one thing I could bank on that I would think is that in games that AD and Boogie plays, like you said, they're going to have a free throw advantage or get to the line quite a bit. So that's my one. I could see any number of outcomes for Drew this season. Honestly, I can. Like, I could see a year in which, you know, overall he has a career year because he finally did have a healthy offseason and he's being more aggressive. And then I could also see just his most inefficient year, you know, as he just was up and down and up and down, trying to be aggressive, but it not really being his game and what he feels natural in. So I guess I could rely on his defense, know his on-ball defense, what it's going to be. But, yeah, there's just so many things that I just couldn't predict. But we do have to do predictions. That's what we do on this show. We got three games. The Memphis game, what do you think ends up being the X factor of this game? Or if you were to examine me from the future and you were just able to ask one question, one fairly vague question, but you were able to ask about a matchup or a certain thing in the box scores or whatever, and I would give you the answer and then you had to draw the conclusion from that, what would be the thing you wanted to know?
So this will be kind of weird, but how does Jamichael Green guard Anthony Davis in this game, and is it effective?
Okay.
Because here's the weird thing about Memphis. Like, no one talks about Jamichael Green, really. But there have been few players in the league who I feel guard Davis as well as Jamichael Green does.
Yeah.
The guy just has the athleticism and the power and the gumption, and sometimes it gets him in foul trouble and then Davis can go off. And sometimes he just makes Davis look like he doesn't know what he's doing and he just fades further and further out. So I think that will make a big difference in this game. Does Davis handle him and put him in trouble, or does Jamichael handle Davis and make him not as effective as he can be?
Yeah, I think that's a big one. I want to know what Memphis is going to get from their guys that are going to piss me off if they play well. Like Andrew Harrison, if Chandler Parsons all of a sudden decides he wants to make shots that game, James Ennis, Wade Baldwin, Tyreek, like these are all guys. We were talking about our players and their deficiencies. I would still take our deficient players over theirs and definitely our top of the roster, but I feel like whoever wins this game is going to be the team that has the most guys where the other fan base is going, who or how did that guy have his aberration night against us?
They also unfortunately have three different guys who have the potential to, you know, maybe score 15 in a game if things go the right way. Who are just, if the Memphis Grizzlies win, you're just going to be like, why did it have to be that guy? If Evans or Ennis or Wayne Selden, all of whom, of course, the Pelicans have had on their roster recently, have a night like that, like it's going to be frustrating.
Yeah, I agree. This is a game that the Pelicans should go in there, start the season with a victory, knowing that Golden State is coming two nights later, just be ultra aggressive and just through sheer talent win this game.
And by the way, just to make everybody burn a little bit, the combination of Ennis, Evans, and Selden this year make less money than Etuan Moore.
So then definitely less than Solomon Hill.
Yes. All right. So what's your prediction for this game? Do they get first game of the season? Do they get the win on the road?
I'm going to unfortunately say no. My ray of hope is Boogie. So the last time these two teams played, Boogie put up 41-16. He demoralized Marc Gasol, who just looked like destroyed by the end of that game. AD, Cousins, and Drew all had huge plus numbers. They got nothing from their other players in that game, and they walked away with a pretty convincing win. I don't know. I just really feel the Rondo thing has thrown them through a loop, and then now they're trying to go back a different way. Memphis is who they are, even though that's not very talented. I think it's a close game, and then I would just trust Memphis's execution at home down the stretch. So, fortunately, I will say no, but there are a lot of things to be excited about based off of the last time these two teams played. So, in a regular season game. What about you?
I'm giving the win to the Pelicans. I don't care.
Okay.
I think all that stuff you just said is crap. That's not true. DeMarcus Cousins is going to have to wreck some faces if they're going to win this game. But I think they're going to take it. And it's just because I have a bias against Memphis, and I've had it for 3 years, and one day, it'll be true. They are not the San Antonio Spurs, damn it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in this game, I think Tony Allen could come in and definitely put some clamps on Conley for a little bit. I just think that the Pelicans are going to have one of those X factors, one of the other guys, and on the road against a good defensive team. Like, honestly, I would say the guy who has the best chance of being that is Jordan Crawford. Like, I don't see Etuan Moore having a great game. I don't see Darius Miller coming in his first NBA game in a couple of years, all of a sudden playing well. You could never expect it from Dante, but I think that at least one or two Pels other than the big three are going to have to come in and have, you know, one of their aberration games. And I would say the best chance of a guy having that would be Jordan Crawford. But you know, the one I would love to see that also could do it is what if they've just kind of been holding them back, and Diallo just comes into this game and is just snatching offensive boards and scoring points, and they just kind of unleash him? Or is there any possibility, like, who else would you say are the highest variance Pels outside of the big three that really could be a 0-point game or an 18-point game? How would you list those in order on the last return?
Highest variance would probably be Crawford first, because he can be 3 or 23. Right. Probably Etuan Moore.
See, I don't feel that way. I feel like he's going to give you 6 or he's going to give you 10. But
no, you're right. So actually, it would probably be Crawford, then Cunningham, then Diallo, then Moore.
Yeah.
And I say that without – I legitimately have no idea what Darius Miller will give us. And he could be a high-variance guy too. He's hitting his threes or he's not. But I feel like those other guys – like both Diallo and Crawford are relentless gunners who are not going to pass the ball. And if they're making decent shots, and some nights they will be, it can be either 2 points or 20 points. So
I looked at his summary just out of curiosity. Etuan Moore is perfectly balanced. He had of games with 0 to 9 points last year, 36. Games with 10 to 19 points, 36. And then he had one game where he had between 20 and 29, and it was actually exactly 20 at Milwaukee. So that was his highest scoring game last year. But yeah, you look up the box scores and it's just 11 points, 6 points, 13 points, 10 points, 13 points, 11 points, 9 points, 7 points. Like, I think you know pretty much what you're going to get from him. But yeah, Dante Cunningham, if he hits his first two corner threes, you know, he could have one of those Willie Green games where he hits a couple of them and it's like, wow, Dante put up 16. What a great signing. And then he gives you zero the next night against Golden State.
Yeah. So I believe we're the Pelicans get to play the Warriors next at home. It's a loss. You're giving them anything but a loss.
The only way I think it's possible is if, like, Golden State goes out and blows Houston out in the first game and then just kind of, like, chills or laughs about that or whatever, and then, you know, Boogie and AD come in, and before you know it, the Pels are up 20, and then they just hold on down the stretch. But far more times than not, yes, the Pelicans will get a loss in this game.
Yeah. Okay, so... Are we, like, what is the legitimate, is that the only legitimate way the Pelicans take advantage of some cold shooting or maybe some sloppiness? They get a big lead and then they manage to score just enough that as the Warriors start raining threes, they hold on? Is that really the only feasible way? There's no way the Pelicans could, you know, lock them down a little bit, go back and forth, and then edge something out at the end?
The Pelicans would never win a game against Golden State in which if there was a fifth quarter, they would still win. By that, I mean, like, you know when you win those games and you're the inferior team, but you won because the clock ran out. And, like, so it's just some different variation of a Pelicans winning game like that. Maybe Draymond gets a bunch of calls, starts talking to the refs. The refs have a quick whistle and the Golden State guys are starting to get teed up and, you know, eventually they just kind of laugh it off and move on to the next game. But I don't think the Pelicans are ever going to out-execute and beat Golden State in a game. It'll just be some kind of fluke or something and then eventually the clock runs out. They would never be able to actually out-execute them and just beat them straight up in a game where you go, yep, the Pelicans just played better tonight, and they're a legitimate threat to Golden State moving forward.
Okay. I was hoping you could be less depressing than that, so we'll move on.
I'm just a huge believer in IQ and systems and like, Golden State, they're smart guys, they're humble, they move the ball, they just play. People get so mad at them because they came together and they have all this talent. But I've seen a lot of teams with a lot of talent that don't play the right way. They play the right way and have really smart guys and, oh, by the way, have all that talent. The Pelicans would never, ever out-execute them.
Right. Okay. Then they get to play the Lakers.
The Kuzmas.
Yeah. Kyle Kuzma is the big star there. Ball who. But, I don't know. They have some interesting pieces, right? I mean, they do have Lopez at center who can hit some threes, and you know, Julius Randle got ripped over the summer. Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, I think starters versus starters, the Pelicans win. You know, almost every time those two units are on the court, but I could see the Lakers bench at home, you know, thoroughly outplaying the Pelicans bench, and then it being one of those games where the Pelicans are behind and then, okay, fourth quarter, now we're going to start playing, but then it's, you know, too late of a kind of thing, or some guy's already hot because they weren't respecting him in the first half and he just keeps going off like a, you know, a Jordan Clarkson type, finishes with 29 in the game or something stupid like that. So I don't think it's a give-me-win this early in the season. Do you remember a couple of years ago, I think it was Gentry's first year, but, like, we played Orlando in, like, one of the first couple games of the year, and they Orlando won. And it's just, you know, the bad teams, even didn't Philly start 3-0, like, 2 years ago?
Yeah,
like, the bad teams, they don't start the season bad.
Well, even the Lakers last year, I think, were 10-10, 20 games in.
So the you want the bad teams on your schedule at the end when they've given up, when they're tanking, you know, when they're ready to go. The bad teams don't play bad at the beginning of the season. So just something to keep in the back of your head.
All right, so we used to do this all the time, so let's do it for this team. I tell you, one person went off against the Pelicans, and that was the main reason they lost, was they couldn't contain this one unknown dude, or even known dude, whatever. Who's that dude?
I think it would be Brandon Ingram.
Okay.
You?
I was going to say Clarkson.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced we have, and we're both going for wings. I'm just not convinced this team has a guy who can slow the best wing, and maybe we'll see some Tony Allen out there to do that.
I think Tony Allen or Drew could get on Clarkson if they got hot. I don't think there's a guy on this. I think maybe you try AD on Ingram if he got hot. I don't think even Tony Allen could bother Ingram in the slightest if he started going. So he would be the guy that I'd be most afraid of if he got going. I don't know if this Pelicans team has an answer for him.
Okay. Are you that worried about Ingram? Do you think he could turn into that kind of guy? Last year he was pretty bad.
Yeah, I could not. No, he wasn't bad last year. He was bad at the beginning of last year. You saw a sign. But yeah, he was my number one guy in the class 2 years ago. Even ahead of Ben Simmons, I still feel that way. If I was redrafting last year's class, I would take Ingram one, and then I would be debating between Jamal Murray and Ben Simmons for number two. But yeah, Ingram would still be my number one pick if I was redrafting last year's draft.
All right. Got anything else to talk about?
That's it.
Are we both predicting wins against the Lakers or not?
Yeah, I got 1-2 for the week, and which means that in the beginning of part of the week, I'm just going to be replaying your rap over and over again to get me through it until that first win. Because until the Pelicans win that first game, I think we're all going to be worried about another 0-9 or 0-11 start.
Yeah. So thanks, everybody, for listening in the know. And I'll take you out with... Owner in the Coma, Young Veteran.
Our Schwizzle here, coming straight from Bourbon Street Shots. I hope you're ready. Here we go. You think your job is hard, then come down to NOLA. Try and build a team with your owner in a coma. They say tear it down, trust the process, it's easy. You'll get a savior like Bennett or Beasley. You seen that P-E-R? No way. Not gonna work, I'm not gonna end up like Hannigan. I'm putting my chips down and signing Young Veterans.
Young Vets. Think of all that fine upside.
The other teams can't see it cause they're just blind. If a guy ain't developed, you gotta work to free his mind. If you're losing every day with coaches who just bitch, gonna get him in my system and treat him to the Popovich.
Young Vets.
His name's Greg, baby. With 3 G's.
Young Vets.
You know what that means.
Young Vets. Young Vets.
I'll bring him in house, they already know the NBA. They'll sum down, gain 5 pounds, and play the right way. We'll play big or small, and we'll switch the pace. It'll feel like you just got hit with a mace.
Young Vets. Young Vets. Young Vets.
We'll be killing off teams like it's Game of Thrones. It'll feel like the Red Wedding as I feed on their bones. You see, I'm building a team that'll stand the test of time. That Larry O'Brien trophy, it's mine.
Young Vets.
Yeah, and all those guys who say I shouldn't be trading my pick, well, you can just suck my...
Young Vets.
Young Veterans.